This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's touch on one more case that obviously people are still talking about. We're still talking about.
Yeah.
We are still lots of comments about Nancy Guthrie. 84 years old. She'd just come home from dinner with her family, and by morning, she was gone. Blood on her porch, her doorbell camera dead, her pacemaker disconnected at 2:28 in the morning. For 6 months now, the people investigating this held two letters that claimed to explain everything, including one that says she'd already been dead and buried somewhere in nature. On July 31st, they finally let the public read them, and the question filling up our inboxes now ever since is the one no family should ever have to ask. Do you believe the note? And I guess the big question is, should the family believe it? The second note says she perished shortly after she was taken, that she's buried in nature now. If that were my mom, this is a comment we got from somebody. If that were my mom, I don't know if I could accept a letter as an answer. Should the Guthries believe a word of it? Well, that's a good question. Should they believe a word of these two notes? And I want to just conjecture it here too, why the two are connected. Because there's been a lot of notes that have come in. TMZ's talked about all different ones. The only reason these two have any sort of weight is they came in early, they were from the same IP address, and they appear in that first one to mention things that some believe would be unknowable unless you were actually there, saying that the floodlight was destroyed, which we still have yet to confirm if the damn thing was actually destroyed. People just seem to take that at face value. I talked to Koff about it the other day. I'm like, was it destroyed? Do we even know if that was destroyed? And nobody seems to know for sure. Or if it was just burned out. Destroyed and burned out are a little different. And that the watch was found on the floor. And that was noted, and that it was specific enough that, of course, someone would have to have been in the house to know it. I don't know. I think that's up for a little bit conjecture, too. Robin, what do you think? Should the family believe that these notes have anything to do with the actual disappearance of their mother?
So, these notes, I think, are really, really good for investigators. They're good for us to understand what happened. It helps us remove all these wild conspiracy theories or really complicated explanations. So let's look at, really, we have two possibilities here that we're really left with that people seem to be locking in on. There's no other notes anyone's given any attention to. So we either have these two notes, like you said, they came from the same IP, so most likely from the same person, or they're fakes. Let's go down both avenues. So I'm edging towards they actually are from someone, from the porch guy that went in this house. I'm edging on that side. So okay. I'll give it a 60% on this one. But as always, maybe. And here's why. So if they are, my theory now, a good friend of mine, Dr. Chris Mahandy, he agrees, as well as other FBI profilers, retired Jim Clemente and others, not all, but some, agree that it looks like home invasion for something of value in the house that went sideways, panic escalation, she and Nancy is removed from the home. So why do the notes support that? Because these notes, the first one in particular, does not fit any other standard or even expected or methodology as a primary, as in other words, plan A for abduction. It was plan B for abduction. And what I mean by that, even the FBI's words, or Pima County, one or the other, they said they're treating it as if it was an abduction, not it is an abduction, as if. Because, right, at the end of the day, it was an abduction for ransom. It wasn't the primary. That's why I hear that language. I say as if. So for me, note A and then B, we'll get to in a second, was because plan A fell apart, could not find what they're looking for in the house. So they decided we're going to take Nancy. And then what happens, so if money is your intention to get and ransom was the way to get it, you would not have, one, you would have shown a sign of life. You would have made it easy to get the money and you would have followed through on it. Rapid succession, make it easy, in, out, gone. That is exactly how every single ransom goes, whether it's a novice or whether experienced with the cartel. I don't care what it is. It's never, ever been recorded this way. So laws of probability, zero. The second note then, let's take it as it's real. because this is the theory we're on right now, they completely gave up on the money. What? So they're mitigating the fact that, as everyone has said, including our good friend Jen Coffendeffer, that they're mitigating in case they're caught because of that. And it's also extremely empathetic. Empathetic people don't take bodies for one thing, and don't take people for ransom. It's more pragmatic than that. And also, they gave up on the money. Well, what would compel someone, if that was their primary objective, was to use Nancy for financial gain? Why not still double down and get financial gain from returning Nancy? Because they didn't have a plan for it. It was plan B. So plan A was getting something at a house, and it fell through, so they had to go to plan B. Those notes to me are so solidly saying that her ransom abduction was plan B. And then some people will say, well, note B, it was just to torment. There is zero language in there or leakage anywhere else saying that these notes were meant for torment, they're meant for giving agonizing or anything like that to the family. It was literally, we want out, we're done, we're not giving asking for any money, and we're running away, and we're mitigating our impact by saying this. Now, that is if we believe the notes are real. Now, let's go down the road if the notes aren't real. Well, you know what happens then? Nancy's missing. And no ransom. So it's either she was taken as ransom and it was plan B, yeah, as according to the notes, or she was taken.
Do you think...
That's it.
Do you think she was already dead when the first note came out? Where it goes, and if we don't get it by this time, the price goes up. And if we don't get it by then, she's dead. Well, they end up sending that second note from the same IP before the deadline of the price increase, in saying that she's already dead. That's what's weird to me about the whole thing. Was it an initial like, oh shit, she's already dead, let's try and get some money out of this, and it doesn't work? I'm wondering if there was some intervention in the meantime there, because it almost sounds like they're written by two different people, or somebody got to that person that thought, well, let's try and get some money, and this is, I think, how ransom letters work, and it doesn't work out, and they go, well, if we get caught, it's almost like they're mitigating their, you know, the circumstance here of the damage that they're doing. If we show some remorse, it was an accident, it was horrible, we have evidence of that on the record, because they're so fearful that they're going to get caught. That second letter just feels like it was a kid that knows, you know, the teacher's going to come. They're going to at some point figure out that, you know, the cookies are missing off the desk, and they're going to look at the camera and figure out who took them. So they're going to, I wasn't even hungry, you know, whatever, just some sort of shit. You know, I was going to feed the starving child down the road, whatever, some sort of reason that's going to not make it as bad as it otherwise would be, is how that kind of reads. But again, it's so bizarre in general for any of it to even be out there with no body, with no other evidence. I don't know. I just, again, at the end of the day, what do we know? She was taken.
Yeah, yeah. and I think this,
and everything beyond that is still a big, giant question mark.
You know, as some folks had said, including Jen, it looks as if that blood splatter on the front porch came from like a bloody nose dripping from being over someone's shoulder. My thought process on this, the way the notes are written, from my point of view, is that she was taken and most likely not coherent or unconscious or barely conscious when they took her. She's probably having an episode as they left. And so I think when they got her to the location, sent the first note out, she might not have even been conscious. And then, yeah, she probably died in their care, not understanding what the hell was going on. And that's when they freaked out. So I think she was on her way out when they took her out of that house because of the shock of it, because of the impact of whatever happened in that house, which is unintended. Although there was no blood found in the house. So I'd imagine, I mean, can you imagine someone, I mean, my parents are this age, you know, and they are extremely frail. I mean, if someone, yeah, came into my parents' house, yeah, they'd probably both die, you know, on the spot, you know, some stranger like that. So kind of having the shock of that happen, passing out and falling down, or maybe she was shoved down and couldn't get back up. I mean, there's a lot of things when you're 82, 84 years old that are going to make it so you cannot come out under your own power. So I do not think she came out of that house under her own power because of the way the blood was on the front porch. And because of that first note, they're planning on that plan B. And I think plan B went right out the window, and their plan C was run yeah. fast and stay low. And I, because again, they either those notes are real, which indicates plan B, or they're not real, which means she was just taken by someone for no purpose or reason.
Who do you think would be more coherent and competent? Nancy Guthrie after a frying pan to the head being pulled out of her house, or Sheriff Nanos on a Tuesday saying things like,
to toss
I don't have any note indicating she's dead, one day before his own department releases exactly that note. I'm going to go with Nancy. I think Nancy could probably deliver a more coherent, competent statement than Nanos while coughing up blood being drug out of her home than Nanos on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
This is the next question. I'm not trying to be funny, but I mean, it's darkly comical in a way of just how fucking bad Nanos is. Literally saying to CBS, I don't have any note indicating that she's dead a day before the department releases that exact note saying that she's dead. This isn't like, this is the biggest damn case in the country probably right now that's active in terms of attention.
Right.
You're the sheriff that has a microscope on you now for 6 months. We're well over the hump of your words matter. I know that was like a big thing at the beginning that he had to say aloud that I'm not used to people listening to me.
There's a reason. That's a clue right unto itself, isn't it?
What the hell is going on in this man's mind, Robin? It's all conjecture here, but I mean, I'm not aware of any note. Like, are you just playing stupid, not knowing you're going to be releasing this stuff tomorrow? Or are you just really that unaware of the elements of the investigation as to which is going on right now?
I think all of it, you know, it's his... And we see this in every case. I mean, there hasn't been a case we've ever covered or I've ever researched, because I did this when we were starting to cover Nanos. I said, you know, when you do the research, is there ever someone that's the front man, the sheriff, the chief, or, you know, the colonel in charge of state police, whatever it is, has there ever been a front man or woman out in front on the first day something major like this breaks that everyone says, that was a great job? No, they all stumble. They all fall down because you never know what the impact of your words is going to be. But a vast majority of these people, after the first stumble, shut up, regroup, get better, and they move forward from there. You know, and so it's the first initial stumble, whether it's, you know, I mean, just look at a Nolan Wells case. You know, the sheriff came out with stupid statement day one saying that it was not, you know, they don't suspect foul play. Way before he should have said that. And so what's he doing now? I haven't heard from him. Good. You know, so they're just conducting an investigation. So he learned, move on. Same thing with Koberger's case. You know, the district attorney for that case, the prosecutor, he was horrendous. He was the one saying really, really dumb stuff. And so what they do, they shut him up and things got better. You know, but Nanos is not doing that. So here's my big concern with this, though. At some point, again, the law of averages on this is that we're still in a window that someone can be caught from this. And I know it's one of our questions coming up as well. But my concern with Nanos on this is I'm praying he is not indicative of how the investigation behind the scenes is being conducted. Because if it is, guys like Bob Mata are going to tear it apart. You know, because, you know, chain of custody, evidence, subpoenas, all the things you need to do to prosecute someone behind the scenes, if it's as reckless and as handled so as poorly as Nanos, if it filtered down to the investigators running this, we're screwed on justice. Because if they're not doing the investigation properly, and he's indicative of how it's being done, there's a big problem. Now, that's not always the case. A lot of times, thankfully, it's not the case. But hopefully they're doing the investigation well behind the scenes, so if they actually do eventually get someone, it actually can be prosecuted and justice will be served for the Guthrie family. But I'm
let me riddle you this one here for a second before we wrap up. Obviously, everybody does things based on their own motivations. You know, as a sheriff, you should be wanting to solve crime. I'm not saying this is his motivation here at all. Either way, I'm just in theory. What sort of motivation do you have to get this thing solved if you know at the end of the day it's just going to completely eviscerate your investigation and going to expose just how utterly incompetent you were from day one to the general public, probably to the point where you're going to get like ousted because of that incompetence on a fucking global scale in terms of publicity? What incentive do you have to solve this murder when you've already fucked up the investigation this much?
That's a good question.
Other than it's the right thing for the families. But if your motive is clearly yourself, which I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, Nano seems to be one big steaming pile of narcissism, in my opinion. Those folks are going to do things that are going to benefit themselves, and they're going to avoid like the fucking plague anything that's going to put them in a bad light. I mean, he's already put himself in a bad light by his own words, but because it came out of his mouth, he doesn't think his shit smells. This would be different. This would be out there for the world to investigate if we got to that stage, if we found someone, if there was a trial, if when there was an investigation that could dissect the shit out of this department and really expose just all of the holes in it. There is zero incentive for him to solve this damn thing, and I'm wondering if that's what's running the real show, his ego and not wanting exposure. Crazy conspiracy on my part, not saying that's what he's doing, but I'm saying maybe that's what he's doing.
You could definitely see a world in which keeping it alive benefits him more from finding out how much he failed because the motivation to keep it alive is that if he leaves office and the case is still alive and the next guy comes along or woman comes along and they solve it and it's a mess, it's a shit show and it doesn't get prosecuted or the guy gets off, he can say, see, it wasn't me.
It's a lot of cases that don't get prosecuted correctly or don't get invested. Look at Richard Allen. That's a case that where all the systems seem to work together to block any sort of exposure to just how incompetent the departments were in any sort of fashion where they would be held accountable, because most of it never actually made it to a courtroom because the judge said, la, 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 we don't want to hear about how incompetent the police are in this department.
We did this all the time. My management. Yeah. So I think I've told the story before. Part of what I was doing with my behavior team and me as a case agent inside the bureau was I had to manage my bosses. And because it wasn't all, but some, I had some bosses that their next move in their political career inside the bureau was a promotion. And in order to get promotion, they couldn't take a risk that some, like an operation I had going was going to go sideways. And so yeah. What they would do is they would approve the operation, but not the execution. So that if the next guy came along, he could approve the execution of the operation. And if it went sideways, he could point the finger somewhere else. And so I actually had to always think in terms of two promotions in order to get an operation executed, because I needed one person to approve it and the other person to execute it. That way, both fingers could point at each other if it went sideways. If I had someone in place for 12 months, which is a long time in leadership inside the bureau, means you weren't getting promoted. I had to wait 12 months before I could actually execute a lot of my operations. Not all cases, I'm not paintbrushing, but in my experience, in my circle, and serving in New York, Norfolk, Virginia, FBI headquarters, Quantico, and the Richmond division out of my Fredericksburg office here, I dealt with this a lot. People fearing to take action because they thought it was going to have negative blowback on their career. So I needed to make it part of my strategy that they could point the finger somewhere else if it went sideways. Because what am I always doing? You have to make it safe for someone to say yes to moving forward on things, and because otherwise they lived in fear. Now, that's for people who weren't considering doing the righteous work, as I say.
Yeah.
And Nanos might fall into that.
Maybe.
Don't know. Conjecture.
Yeah, it's conjecture. I don't know. Yeah.
Sad but true, but that's how organizations work. And so here's a good thing for public citizen out there. The good people that know how the system and bureaucracy works know how to work with it so the work still gets done, because I was just one of many that understood the system. I didn't fight the system. I knew how to get stuff done because I knew how to take care of my bosses so they could get their promotions, because again, they were riding that balance between career and operations. Mm-hmm. And some people are leaning more one way or the other. My job is to figure out which way you're leaning so I can make you feel safe, saying yes to the righteous work so we can keep the world safe. There you go.
There's your glass half full moment of the day.
That's me. Always.
That'll wrap this up. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. Be sure to check out Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever books are sold. Sheriff Nanos, this might be a good, maybe, you know.
So many people in our lives, right?
We should send it to him. Autograph copy. All right, we're going to wrap it up right there. Your thoughts in the comments section. We'll continue with their Substack, YouTube. Links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe. Until next time, for Todd, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.